A mismatch can impact a lot of things, not the least of which is the pro forma of the property. It can also contribute to reduced profitability. And loan vehicles, such as city, local, and federal funding, have stringent requirements, so their cost-benefit is questionable, unless the fit is just right. Your mortgage broker should be very clear about every loan term so you can take full advantage of them and avoid the pitfalls. If there is something you don't understand, do whatever it takes to clarify it. You should also ask your mortgage broker what they know about tax credit, HUD financing, and related agencies, and ask them to relate to you the advantages and disadvantages of these financing vehicles. Experience with them, in addition to knowledge about them, is a real advantage. The last thing you want is a mortgage broker who is learning on the job with your project. Look for a seasoned veteran. In the absence of a good mortgage broker partner, some real estate attorneys, I am one of them, also specialize in obtaining the most favorable financing vehicles available. It is a service we provide, and I'm sure we are not alone. Given that your attorney is looking out for your best interest, he or she will analyze the loan for more than just interest rates and amortization schedules. He or she will read the fine print and the finer points to discover any possible ways a loan, because of its terms, could come back to bite you years later. Insurance agent. I won't go into big detail on this one, except to make a few points. Have an insurance agent who specializes in real estate and development early on in the process to avoid easily avoidable pitfalls. The lender generally has the specific coverage required for your transaction. You should be able to rely on your insurance broker to easily interpret the requirements and deliver an insurance certificate covering the same within 24 hours. Over the years, as lending has become more oriented to packaging loans for sale in the secondary market, lenders have dictated the types of insurance that must be obtained, as well as the limits that they believe to be appropriate. Your insurance agent should be able to provide you additional insight with respect to the suitability of the proposed forms of coverage applicability of the proposed limits. There are probably entire agencies in your city or town that offer mostly real estate, construction, and development insurance. There are a number of things, based on your project, that will require insurance of one sort or another. Insurance is all about risk management, and the question becomes how much risk you want to assume versus if you should pay a premium to have someone else assume it. If you know in advance the type of insurance you will need, you can factor it into your project budget and determine if the project is feasible and will deliver a solid return with these added costs. If it won't, then you may want to reconsider the project entirely. 1031 Exchange Intermediary. Every time a client presents me with an opportunity to participate in an IRC Section 1031 transaction, I insist that he or she has his or her accountants run the numbers to determine the effect of paying the taxes versus deferring the tax with an exchange. From my vantage point, the tax savings do not replace the need for a strong real estate transaction for the replacement property. I believe you make money buying real estate, which is best demonstrated when you sell real estate. Many times, investors are working on a project that will be part of a 1031 exchange. There's an entire chapter in this book about exchanges, but in a nutshell, a 1031 exchange occurs when you sell one property and purchase another property under the tax code 1031 and minimize or avoid paying taxes on the gain. Anytime a 1031 exchange is involved, you should have a qualified intermediary execute it. The reason is simple. If there is any misstep with the procedures of the exchange, you will not qualify, and you will end up paying the taxes you were trying to avoid. You want to know exactly how much the tax is and weigh the pros and cons of the exchange. A good test, in my opinion, is asking yourself whether or not you would go forward with the transaction if an exchange was not involved. In other words, would you still consider this opportunity a good investment? Even if you answer yes to this question, I always make sure my client has discussed the exchange with me and his or her tax advisor, so the entire plan can be viewed in light of the investor's bigger financial picture. There are also non-tax reasons for exchanges. Here are a few that you may not have considered. Exchange from fully depreciated property to a higher value property that can be depreciated. Exchange from non-income producing raw land to improved property to create cash flow. Exchange to meet location requirements. Exchange from a larger property to several smaller properties used to divide an estate among several heirs or for retirement reasons. Exchange from a tenants in common interest in one property to a fee interest in another property. So what do you look for in a qualified intermediary? Exchangeors must feel confident that exchange funds will be safe and available for the successful conclusion of their exchange. It is best to hire a qualified intermediary that first comes highly recommended by other real estate investors. You should also do your own due diligence to determine how the intermediary is investing funds it has on hand. Recently, a large intermediary was unable to fulfill its funding obligations because it had invested the bulk of its funds in auction-rate securities, which became illiquid overnight. If you cannot understand the nature of the intermediary's underlying investments, then you should not let the intermediary hold your money. Second, be sure to obtain a written guarantee for the exchange of funds. And finally, verify that the qualified intermediary has fidelity bond coverage, preferably in the amount of $100 million professional liability insurance and employee theft and dishonesty coverage. General contractors. Nearly all real estate projects involve some construction or renovation. And for that reason, having a general contractor run the show is a good idea. Unless you are a general contractor yourself, you should never attempt to manage your own construction, no matter how well you think you can do it. If you are an investor, remain an investor. It should almost go without saying that you want to be very careful which contractor you choose. Your decision will greatly impact the quality of your project. You can get excellent referrals from your architect, who may even recommend one particular contractor. And if you have selected the right insurance agency in your city or town, the one that specializes in construction and does the bond work for all the contractors in town, you will be able to get some solid referrals from them as well. Other than that, you can ask your attorney, mortgage brokers, lender, and look around town at the projects that are currently underway. That will give you a good idea of which companies are the most reputable. No matter how tempting it is to go cheap and hire a small-time player for your small job, it is never a good idea to hire any contractor who isn't licensed and insured. As an attorney, I will never allow my clients to assume the astronomical risks that they are assuming when working with a contractor or any tradesperson who is not licensed and insured. I think it is always a good idea to determine whether or not the general contractor can obtain a performance and payment bond. If you learn that the general contractor is unable to obtain a performance and payment bond, you should find out exactly why that is the case. If the general contractor is involved in its own development activities, bonding companies will frequently shy away from the risk. However, if the general contractor is not involved in development, then bonding companies should be more inclined to underwrite the risk associated with the general contractor's affairs. If a performance and payment bond is obtained, the general contractor will pass the cost on to the developer, which may be significant. Your general contractor is responsible for carrying out the design plans to the letter, and for managing the trade contractors, subcontractors, who will actually do the work. General contractors seldom actually perform any of the trades themselves. They are simply very experienced project managers who know the process of construction and know the people and the companies that will get the work done. Pick a good contractor and you elevate your chances of having good tradespeople working on your project. You should look for general contractors who pay their subcontractors and material men in a timely manner and have a systematized manner of obtaining all of the required lien releases. Too often, general contractors who are struggling look to use subcontractors and material men as a form of working capital financing as a result of the general contractor's failure to pay them in a timely manner. Ask for a list of references who are subcontractors from various trades and material men from various product lines. How do you know you have a good contractor? First of all, look at their previous projects. Walk through them. Is the quality up to your standards of excellence? You can tell by looking at finishes and details. If the details are shoddy, one can only assume what lies behind the walls hidden from view isn't much better. Second, and perhaps even more important, is ask the tradespeople. Does the contractor pay them on time, or is the company always running way behind on payment? This could be a sign of cash flow problems. Stay as far clear of that as you can. What you don't want is to have construction loan draws that are meant to be buying your building materials going to pay off an old debt on another project. And speaking of money, building costs, like anything else, can start out in one solar system and end up in a completely different galaxy if not closely managed right from the time of the initial estimate. To set a price, you'll need a clearly defined budget, a clearly defined scope of work, and a clearly defined schedule. From my vantage point, I believe that folks starting out in development should look to work with established general contractors who have obtained a performance or payment bond for the project. The additional costs associated with the performance and payment bond are substantially less than the potential downside. Construction risks that can cost you money. As an attorney, I'm always concerned about risks. So here are a few that I've encountered, which you'll want to keep within your field of view. It will save you money. Poorly defined separation of functions between architect, engineer, and contractor. Scope creep that causes a small project to become a big one based on change orders. Project acceleration. This may be done as a way to provide an incentive for your contractor to complete your project prior to the original date for purposes of interest savings, favorable material pricing, or changes in deadlines for laws or regulations. Poor working relationships between parties that cause a lack of collaboration and inefficiencies. Keeping your contractors happy is pretty easy. Mostly what they want is to be paid on time. They, in turn, have subcontractors to pay, and paying them on time keeps their tradespeople happy. Pay on time, and you have a happy worksite. Contractors also tend to take great pride in the work that they do and feel a great sense of accomplishment bringing a building out of the ground. And finally, they value their relationships with owners, designers, and subcontractors. Work as a team, keeping all these things in good standing, and you'll have a general contractor who will become a valued asset to your real estate investment business. A few final words. Any real estate project is all about minimizing financial risk, time risk, design risk, and quality risk. It's about choosing the right people to help you achieve this and working collaboratively all along the way. If you are the type of person who seems to foster adversarial relationships, this will be difficult. That's not to say that there won't be times when being tough will be required. There most definitely will be. You'll find as you go from simple projects to the more complex that your team will have to function at a higher level with greater cooperation and problem-solving abilities. In all instances and with every project, big or small, that you do, have a good attorney looking out for your interests. Find the best one you can and let him or her do the job you deserve. Ways to learn more. Visit www.lotzar.com.
Charles W. Lotzar is founder of the Lotzar Law Firm, PC, a diversified practice with representation of clients in commercial and real estate transactions, low-income housing, tax credit financings, administrative proceedings, and various forms of tax-exempt and taxable bond financings. A former senior partner in the national law firm Kutak Rock LLP, Lotzar is involved in all phases of real estate development, including debt and equity financing. He has extensive experience in dealing with public contracts and issues related to public officials, and he has been involved in bond financings that have an aggregate value in excess of $5 billion.
3. Ross McAllister. Profits from the ground up. Ross is Ken McElroy's partner in their business MC Properties. Kim and I are often financial partners with Ken and Ross in a number of their projects and have done very well financially, even in tough economic times. There are three primary reasons why our investments with Ross do so well. The first reason is that he is a builder. He understands the ins and outs of the construction industry. Second, he is a property manager. This is important because the key to long-term investing in real estate is professional property management. And third, Ross is exceptional at finance by managing the ratios between debt, equity, and expenses. When it comes to real estate investing, he is the complete package. On top of that, he is a great guy. He is fair and honest. In 2002, when the Tucson apartment market was hot, Ross's background allowed us not only to do well buying existing apartment houses, but also building new apartment houses. One of our first investments together was the purchase of an existing apartment complex his company was managing. This gave us an advantage because we knew the numbers were honest, which is important since most pro forma numbers provided by realtors are lies. Second, the property had an additional 10 acres of vacant land. Once we bought the existing apartment house, our next step was to begin construction on an additional 100 units on the vacant land. Then, with the increased rents a few years later, Ross refinanced the property and Kim and I got all of our initial investment money back. This means each month we receive a check from the positive cash flow, and Kim and I have zero invested in the project. If you do the math, this means Kim and I have an infinite return on our money. In layman's terms, an infinite return is truly money for nothing, every month. This is why Kim and I love being partners with Ross McAllister and Ken McElroy. Robert Kiyosaki.
Perhaps you've already read, and maybe even reread, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, as well as my partner Ken McElroy's book, The Advanced Guide to Real Estate Investing. And now you are ready to take the plunge and invest in real estate on your own. That's probably why you bought this book written by real estate professionals, each of whom have been earning their livings in real estate for decades. There are pages in this book that are full of tremendous opportunities and innovative ways to make money in real estate. But one avenue of investment you may not have thought of and may want to consider is to develop your own project from the ground up. The profits you have heard about from real estate development are mind-boggling. And if you are like most people, the numbers leave you frothing at the mouth for a piece of the development pie. Yes, there is tremendous profit to be made from real estate development. But as with any high-reward venture, there is also the possibility of tremendous financial losses if you let your emotions override good judgment, or if you don't know what you're doing. In this chapter, I will outline some of the steps you need to take to evaluate a development opportunity. steps I've gleaned from my expertise in developing apartment communities during the past 3 decades, and from some 20-plus projects of about 4,000 units. And because my experience is primarily in apartment development, that is what we will talk about. However, these fundamentals apply to any commercial development, such as office or retail, and to any size apartment community, be it 4 or 400 units. For me, development from the ground up is the most exciting way to invest in real estate. There are few professional accomplishments more rewarding than to see a project go from conception to reality. And it's even better when that project produces positive financial results. Yet, with that said, nothing can be more frustrating than working for years, yes, years, to start your project and battling through environmental and governmental regulations, market conditions, financial institutions, and your own continuous questioning about whether all this frustration and risk is worth it. That side of the business is a reality too, even for those of us who have many projects already under our belts. I know you can see yourself as the owner of that perfect corner lot at Main and Better Main, graced with a structure and a monument sign bearing the name you have been dreaming about for years. Maybe it's, insert your dream name here, in large letters on the monument sign in the front. You can see all the happy families living there, and you can hear the ka-ching of the cash register as the rents roll in every month. But before you build that sign or take that cash to the bank, let's talk about some of the decisions you must make first before you consider embarking upon this adventure. Before you call me when you are in the middle of your next development and say, "But Ross, you didn't tell me I would need an environmental impact study on the duck-billed humpback pygmy field mouse." Remember, I did tell you that something always comes up to make your project harder than you thought it would be. Tip. The main lesson I have learned in 30 years of apartment development is that each project is unique and different. Each will bring its own set of opportunities and challenges. A clear vision. From the beginning, for any project to be truly successful, you need to have a clear vision of what you want to build and how developing this property meets your own objectives. That means you also need to actually have objectives. Or better said, you need a solid understanding what you want this project to achieve. One of the reasons MC Companies, the company Ken and I own, has been successful in development is that we have an infrastructure in place within our firm to develop, construct, manage, and profitably operate multifamily communities. We are careful to select communities large enough to support an on-site staff, earn economies of scale, and that fit within our investment model. We are careful to keep our egos in check and build for the market rather than for our own self-esteem. When we take on a new development, we draw upon each and every one of those disciplines, development, construction, and management, from inception, to ensure that we make good decisions in the present because we know they will impact the future. This inclusive team approach is crucial to the successful development and operation of our multifamily communities. If you do not have expertise in all these areas, then it's in your best interest to create a team whose members do have the expertise in each of these fields before you venture into multifamily investments, whether you are building a duplex or 400 units. Develop for the long term. Without exception, we build communities with the full intent of operating them once they are done. If the market is strong and the right buyer knocks on our door after the development is complete, we have an alternate option to make money on the investment, but we don't enter a project with this end in mind. It takes many months or years from the time we create the vision of our finished community to the time when we collect even a dollar in rent from the first tenant. To predict what the market will be like at the finish line is not always possible. But if you plan to own and operate the project after it is built and use those numbers in your pro forma, you begin with a more solid platform, a better business premise, from which to launch your development, lease it up, and operate the community profitably. Let's look at the other scenario, from the point of view of building and selling rather than building and operating. What if the market changes from the time that you planned your development to the time it is built and ready for you to operate? If you have not planned on operating it from the beginning, the likelihood of you recognizing the changes, knowing how they affect your project, and then making the necessary adjustments are slim. In the end, you may find yourself holding an obsolete project, or one that would require some serious adjustments to fit the new market conditions. My examples are not entirely hypothetical. In the spring of 2006, the apartment market was hot, and any project completed could be sold for a big profit. Many developers began projects with the idea that they could cash in upon completion with an immediate sale. So, thousands of units were developed and built over the next 2 years. In 2008, banks had changed their qualification and ratios for loans, and their credit criteria changed dramatically, too. Investor money was not readily available, either. Economic conditions had deteriorated, resulting in higher unemployment and a tight economy. The market for new apartments was, at best, weak. Investors were demanding lower purchase prices to compensate for the slower economy. Consequently, many developers found themselves sitting on their shiny new properties in a down economy with cautious investors, reluctant banks, and a weak market for their product. All the assumptions they had made 2 years prior were based on factors that no longer applied. Because they didn't develop their projects with the idea that they were going to operate them, they created a scenario dependent on a sale and ripe for financial disaster. Ken and I have avoided this situation because we plan from the start to operate the communities once they are completed. And we make sure all our actions are consistent with our investment objectives. Consequently, we have been able to adjust to market changes and ride out the difficult times, all the while building long-term value. Tip: I don't believe that it is possible to hit a real estate cycle perfectly. If you do, it's luck. Building value from real estate development over the long term takes skill and expertise. It also takes an operator's eye to recognize market shifts and a mindset that is open to change. Your market niche focus. Just as you simply must have your objectives for a development in place, you must decide which market niche your apartment project or other project will fill. Here are the basics I consider when looking for a market niche. What are the demographics of the area you are considering? What is the salary level of the area? Is there a college population looking for more off-campus housing? And is that the type of community I want to run? Where are the major employment centers? Are new businesses and employment being generated in the area? What other communities are in the area that a prospective tenant will consider? And are they the same class as the community you are developing, that is, luxury, blue-collar, or subsidized housing? What can I build, and how much rent can I charge? Will I enjoy owning and managing the community? In 1999, we took over the development of an 80-unit townhome community in a town with lots of retirees. 24 units had been built, and only two had sold in more than 1 year. When we inspected the project, it was obvious why the sales weren't happening. Each unit had two bedrooms with a detached garage. When homeowners came home, they would park in the garage and would have to walk sometimes hundreds of feet through the property to enter their front doors. A review of other competing townhomes for sale in the area revealed they all had attached garages. Homeowners park, get out of their cars, and take a few steps right into their homes. Is it any surprise why an elderly buyer would prefer the competition? When we took the project over, we bought the two sold units back and converted the entire community to an apartment project, offering it for rent, not to retirees, but to the people who worked in the town. We completed construction of the 80 units, leased the property to full occupancy within 6 months, and operated the project at a profit until we sold it 4 years later. That's understanding the niche and developing for it. The original developer of the townhomes clearly did not understand the market niche, which meant he did not understand the buyer. The most beautiful project imaginable will not rent if it's built in the wrong place. A luxury apartment community may be your dream, but if you build it in a blue-collar area, you won't be able to lease the community or be able to charge enough rent to make the economics work. Matching the needs of the community with the project you develop is crucial to your success. Research and know your demographics before you proceed. Only research will give you the perspective that you need before you take another step forward. Where to build your community? You've most likely heard it before in this book and likely everywhere else. Location, location, location. As you are standing on that dusty lot, filled with years of accumulated trash, a couple of homeless camps and overgrown weeds, envision where the main entrance to your community will be located. Pretend you are driving in and driving out. Look around you. What do you see? If the view is of an industrial complex across the street, a junkyard, or poorly maintained buildings, don't just brush it off. Signs like that generally mean the area isn't going to entice many people to choose your community, no matter how beautiful you make it. On the other hand, sometimes negative factors like these can be minimized. We developed an apartment project on a site where our due diligence revealed that a processing plant was located just half a mile away. The plant took used grease from restaurants and processed it to be reused. When the plant was operating, it stunk to high heaven. But the site was an excellent infill location in a good school district. The clincher was when we discovered that the processing plant was in the midst of implementing rigid pollution control measures. We were able to pull off a really nice affordable apartment community in an underserved area with confidence. Research paid off. While a panoramic view of the mountains or ocean may not be possible or even relevant to your community plans, don't forget to envision what residents will see and feel coming home. Is it welcoming? Does it feel safe? Would you want to call that home after a long day at work? Before beginning a multifamily development project, ask yourself these questions. Lifestyle and convenience. Will your community have good exposure to drive-by traffic? Heavy drive-by traffic is a plus when you're trying to attract potential tenants, but possibly a negative for residents concerned about traffic noise. On the other hand, the cutest, most affordable community in town could suffer high vacancy rates if it is located on a street no one can find, even with a blitz of advertising. How far from the major thoroughfares will your community be, and how easy is the access to them? Is that important for the type of community you are planning to build? How easy will it be for residents to get to work, school, shopping, the movies, etc.? Where are the schools in relation to your community? What is the reputation and rating of those schools? What are the transportation options to and from those schools? What are the employment opportunities in the area? What mass transit is available to help your residents get to work? Is the major downtown area easily accessible? Social amenities. Are parks, movie complexes, theaters, arcades, and sports facilities an acceptable distance from your proposed community? What is the flavor of the part of town you are considering? How does your apartment community plan fit in with the area? Neighborhood amenities. Is shopping in close proximity? Is a major grocery store nearby? It matters for those 10 p.m. milk runs. Development of your site. By this point, you understand that you must choose a site based on your demographic research. Now consider your site from the development perspective. How easy will bringing the project literally out of the ground actually be? This is perhaps the most critical analysis you will need to do, and it is the one that will have the biggest effect on your development costs. Is the site fairly flat, with a minimum of site prep work required? Or does the site have some geographical features that are interesting but challenging? Flat sites are wonderful, and they typically will allow for the highest density. That is, they allow you to construct the most units per acre. Drainage becomes your biggest concern with flat sites because water will not flow off them without effort. On the other hand, a lovely hilly piece of land can make for an interesting project. But on the downside, density will be a challenge, and the geography itself can run up the site development and infrastructure costs very quickly. Foundational structures like retaining walls can take a huge chunk of your development budget in the blink of an eye. The point is, each site provides its own set of challenges and opportunities. You need to understand how they affect the number of units you can build and at what costs. When considering the location of your community, consult with your local governing bodies regarding zoning and other development requirements as soon as you can. Your local government development department can help you determine the required process for gaining permission to develop your project. Be wary, though. I have found cities and counties are notorious for seeing new development as a significant revenue source, and they look for opportunities to solve their problems and budget overruns at your expense. For example, some will make approval of your project contingent upon the city or the town getting concessions from you. You need to understand the law and the regulations so you know what a government jurisdiction can and cannot legitimately require. Do not take their word as gospel without checking. And most of all, be prepared to do battle on every issue. Can you tell that I speak from experience? During the approval process for one project we developed, the city initially required us to build a traffic median in the middle of a 6-lane street, the major highway through town, with the excuse that the median was required to provide safe access to the proposed apartment community. Medians are not cheap. We were going to incur several $100,000 in off-site expenses that threatened to jeopardize the entire deal. However, after many sleepless nights, a great deal of contemplation, and consultation with our development team, we were able to determine that although we were required to augment the street improvements to provide safe access, we could do it by slightly redesigning the entrance to the project and restriping the street at a cost of only $3,000. Just as important as knowing how to work with the city or town is knowing how to work with the utility companies. On your to-do list should be checking with the utility companies that will serve your community for availability of their services, hookup fees, development fees, and monthly service rates. I've seen too many novices get surprised by utility access and hookup issues. Another often overlooked detail is checking on the possible future infrastructure requirements of your site. For example, if your site is on a heavily traveled 2-lane street and the city decides to widen it to 4 or 6 lanes, you will be assessed for your portion of the cost, and you will lose part of your site for the right-of-way. Be prepared for these issues by knowing they can happen up front, then plan your development accordingly. Oh, and let's not forget the remote possibility, which in some parts of the country isn't that remote, that your site could have archaeological or environmental significance. Find out what rules are governing those discoveries in advance of even buying the land. Remember, finding out that your site is the home of those endangered duck-billed humpback pygmy field mice, or the next Machu Picchu, could either kill your development entirely or put it on hold for an indefinite period of time, while experts complete expensive studies and develop mitigation plans. Another tip that every developer must know is the value of checking for any riparian or wetland conditions on the property, as well as drainage, flooding potential, and soil conditions. You don't want your beautiful new community to be in a lake when the summer rains come, and you don't want to find your building slowly, or not so slowly, sinking into the ground because of poor soil conditions. When evaluating a site, you must consider all these factors. I know there are quite a number of them, and I can't stress enough that each site has its own nuances. As a developer, you must be prepared to spend the money to do a proper evaluation. It's pretty easy to see the cost implications if you don't. Your development team. In our company, Ken and I have worked out clear guidelines regarding who will handle which areas of development and management, based on our respective professional backgrounds. At the same time, we constantly consult with each other and make joint decisions. We're always certain to clarify upfront and in writing who will be the team leader and who will make the final decisions. That holds people accountable and gives them ownership. It's fine to use people you know, but this is not the time to give your sister-in-law's cousin his first break in the development business. Tip. You do not have the expertise to handle all the development, management, and construction phases for the community you want to build. You need to start by putting together a development team with the strongest expertise in each area you can find. Your architectural team. The next person on your team will be your architect. Ideally, this will be someone you have worked with in the past and have traveled a lot of rocky roads together. This person will have the experience and relationships with the governing jurisdiction to guide you through all the government requirements. He or she will also coordinate all the other design professions that you need and will provide the site plan, design, and building elevations, unit plans, project amenities, and construction drawings with specifications. Other members of your development team that your architect will coordinate include mechanical engineer who will design the plumbing and HVAC systems, structural engineer who will design the foundations, the framing requirements, and the roofing system, electrical engineer who will design both the underground electrical systems and the building electrical requirements, civil engineer who will design the grading requirements for your site, including drainage, parking lot, and zoning compliances. Your contractor. The contractor will be the guy or gal who is going to take all these drawings, plans, and specifications and construct your community. Think of him or her as translating the two-dimensional plans into three-dimensional buildings, from overseeing the grading of the site all the way through handing over the keys of the finished units. You will want a general contractor licensed in the state in which you are building, and who hires only licensed subcontractors in each trade qualified to do the work. Reputation and past performance of the general contractor will be your main guideline for this professional. Once chosen, you will want to have a signed contract between you as the developer or owner and the general contractor that will delineate the terms of the relationships, including compensation. Common construction contracts. Lump sum or fixed price contract. In this type of contract, the contractor agrees to provide specified services for a specific price and receives this sum upon completion of the project or according to a negotiated payment schedule. If the actual costs of labor and materials are higher than the contractor's estimate, his profit will be reduced. If the actual costs are lower, the contractor will get more profit. Either way, the cost to the developer or owner is the same. Cost plus a fixed fee contract. In this contract, you as the owner or developer will pay the contractor the actual costs of construction plus a fee to the general contractor. If the actual costs are higher than the estimate, the owner must pay the additional amount. If the actual costs are lower, then the owner gets the savings. Guaranteed maximum price contract. This contract states the owner or developer will pay for the costs like a cost plus contract, but the contractor will guarantee that the costs will not exceed a maximum amount. In the event that actual costs are lower than the estimates, the owner keeps the savings. As costs rise, the owner must pay for the additional costs up to the guaranteed maximum. Thereafter, the contractor pays. The construction team. For as important as the general contractor is to the success of any project, understand that the success or failure of your construction relies heavily on the expertise of the entire construction team. I cannot stress enough the importance of hiring a qualified, financially stable contractor who employs a bright project manager, assigns experienced superintendents, and hires excellent tradespeople. Carefully scrutinize each person who will be involved with the construction of your project. Not only is that your prerogative, it's your job. In addition to your general contractor being licensed in the state of your project, he or she must also be fully insured and be bondable. Another tip, and I know everyone needs to get their start somewhere, but give careful consideration before you agree to allow your general contractor to break in a new superintendent or project manager on your job. His limited experience in the field may cost you money and may even jeopardize the quality of your finished product. So, just who constitutes a construction team? Your team should include a strong project manager. It is this person's responsibility, among other things, to decide which subcontractors will be awarded the contract for the project, and to set the construction budget. The project manager studies the plans and specifications submitted by the architectural team, and based on his or her experience, will often suggest adjustments or changes in the plans. A few choice suggestions made by a perceptive and confident project manager can save you thousands of dollars in the construction budget without affecting the quality or the appearance of the finished product. Each project has at least one on-site superintendent, based on the size and scope of the project. The superintendent is responsible for the day-to-day operations of all the subcontracting trades who will be working on the project at any given time. Superintendents set the schedule for the trades to ensure the proper flow of work. There is a sequential order to construction. For example, you don't want the painters arriving before the drywallers have finished putting up the walls. And you certainly want to make sure all the necessary site work, such as grading, compacting, etc., is done before the concrete folks come to pour the building pads. This right-on-time kind of scheduling takes a person who has been around the block and knows how long things take to complete. It takes a person who knows what the demand is for the various trades and knows the appropriate lead times. It also takes someone who can forcefully, yet professionally, get you the best treatment from the subs. Between the subcontractors, superintendents, and the project manager, this construction team is responsible for continued communication with the architect and engineers, and for attending to construction methods and details that don't always show up on the drawings, yet become obvious as construction is in progress. They should also be in continual communication with the testing technicians, building inspectors, financial institution inspectors, and of course you, the owner or developer. Remember, this is your baby, and you cannot deny the fact that you are ultimately responsible for the design and construction pros. The project manager also has another very vital role, one you will come to appreciate. He or she is the person responsible for keeping a close eye on the construction budget. That involves closely monitoring if or when a particular trade is out of sync with the budget, and making adjustments before the close of the project. This is the person who looks out for your financial interests and communicates with you to discuss any overages. In construction, things often take longer and cost more than originally planned, so having a good project manager with good communication skills is a real plus. Where does the general contractor make his money? When you get your first glimpse of a construction budget, you'll notice a line item built in for a specified percentage of the overall construction budget for the contractor's overhead and profit. Remember, construction costs are negotiated between you and the contractor, so you need to understand all the components of the construction budget, including direct costs for labor and materials, subcontractors, and general conditions, as well as profit and overhead. Finally, you are part of the construction team, too. It is up to you to use every means available to make sure that the contractor builds the project correctly and pays his bills. This includes hiring third-party quality control inspectors, requiring proof of payment for the materials and labor, such as lien waivers, and possibly requiring a payment and performance bond. Your title company. Title companies have been mentioned several times in this book, and here they are again. Just as they play a role in acquiring existing property, they play a role in new development too. Here, it is their job to hold all monies involved in the transaction of the land transfer in escrow. They also provide a title report and title insurance. The title company can help you by periodically checking to make sure that the contractor is paying his bills and that no liens have been filed against the project by a subcontractor. You don't want to have your buildings almost completed only to find out that there is a lien on the property from an unpaid sub. It happens. Your property management company. Contrary to what you might think, you'll need a property management company even before your project breaks ground. It is the property management company that will prepare the market analysis and determine the rents your community can reasonably charge. From there, they help you prepare a realistic operating budget. The way management companies make their money is usually based on a percentage of anticipated gross annual rents. Having an experienced property management company has been a true key to our success. The market knowledge and expertise it provides is something we would never dream of doing without. Your financing partner. Unless you are related to Daddy Warbucks or recently won the lottery, if that describes you, let's talk. You will need to obtain financing for your project. You may qualify for various forms of financing, from governmentally controlled financing to commercial banks to private money. All are viable, and all come with certain requirements. It is possible to qualify for governmental or commercial bank loans that offer development and construction financing. These lenders historically will lend from 65% to 85% of the total cost of the project. The credit crunch of 2008 has changed those lending percentages, and developers are required to have more of their own cash in their deal. But regardless of the amount, those capital sources are options. However, governmental or commercial bank lenders will have a first mortgage priority, meaning that in the event of a default, they get paid first. Their interest rates are based on the current market. Another finance option is securing money from private lenders, meaning individuals wanting to invest in a real estate project, as opposed to stocks or bonds. If you have a successful track record and a convincing business plan and sales package for your proposed community, they will lend you the money with the condition that they receive an interest payment as well as a percentage of the profits from the operations of the completed project and any sales proceeds. Although private lenders are typically more expensive than traditional lenders, they are more flexible and may lend you a higher percentage of the project costs. Given the scope of your project and your financial contacts, your funding may possibly come from a combination of these sources, depending on how you structure the financing. Most of the projects Ken and I work on are structured to obtain a commercial bank loan for approximately 67% of the total amount needed for the project, with the remaining 33% contributed as the equity, which may come from investors, our own funds, or both. Your business plan. Obtaining financing isn't as easy as strolling into a bank with a good idea. It takes much more than that. In reality, to obtain financing, you will need a business plan. Business plans come in many shapes and sizes and you can find numerous templates for them all over the Internet. But let me cut to the chase and tell you exactly what banks want to see. This eliminates all the unnecessary fluff that they don't read anyway. Here's what you need to include in your business plan. Executive summary, which explains the purpose of the project and gives a financial summary. You actually can write this first or last, but it's always the first few pages of your plan. Property overview, which includes a description of the site, unit mix, floor plans, site plan, elevations, and pictures of the site. Market overview, which presents neighborhood features, city economics, and the local apartment market. Financial pro forma, which includes development costs, construction costs, and projected operations, income, and expenses. Developer resume, which highlights your credentials. Development team resumes, which highlight the credentials of your architect, engineers, and property managers. Those are the components lenders care about and are the sections they read. No amount of fluff or page volume will make up for a poor job assembling the details in these sections of the plan. Complete analysis and a realistic business case surrounding that analysis have a better chance of receiving funding. A sketchy plan based on incomplete research and analysis with blue sky projections won't. Not only is this document obviously important in your getting the financing for your project, the exercise of doing it helps articulate and establish your goals and objectives. It is the exercise that helps you determine if your project can ultimately be profitable. And let's face it, you should want to know that as much as the lender does. Will you qualify for a loan? Ken and I have spent our entire careers building our credit and financial standing, as well as building our network of contacts within banking and investing circles. These bankers and investors know our reputation and qualifications and are willing to entertain a development proposal that we present to them. Our track record and financial strength give banks and investors confidence that we can complete and operate a financially viable project. When searching for financing for your project, whatever your sources, you can count on them scrutinizing your background, particularly in these areas. What is your financial strength? If you are building the community under the umbrella of a company, what is the financial strength of the entire company? What is your development experience? Have you successfully built numerous projects before, or is this your first time at bat? If this is your first development, what attributes and strengths do you have that will put to rest concerns about your experience? Have you had one or more previous projects fall through in some way? What are the backgrounds, experiences, and strengths of your development team? Are they all solid and strong? Or are there any weak links that could potentially cause hesitation from the source of your loan? What is the source of the equity you will be bringing to the table for this project? How much of your own money are you willing to invest in the project? The stronger your answers to each of these questions, the better the terms and rate of loan you will be able to qualify for. A lender will ask these questions regardless of the type of loan you are seeking, a construction loan or a permanent loan. And that leads us to our next subject. Short-term loan versus long-term loan. A construction loan is a short-term loan with a term length from 6 to 36 months, depending on the size of your project and construction budget. Construction loans usually have variable interest rates and are interest-only loans. The lending institution holds your project as collateral during the course of the loan. In the event of default, you will lose your property. Construction loans are also typically personally guaranteed by the developer, meaning the bank has recourse to your personal assets in the event of default. Unlike with other loans, with a short-term construction loan, the lender will not hand over to you the full amount of the loan all at once. Rather, you'll receive it in monthly payments based on the percent of completion of your project. This process is called a draw, and each month your construction team will submit an application to the lending institution. The lending institution will send out an inspector to verify the work is completed as stated in a workmanlike fashion, and that all local government inspections are complete and approved. Only with the inspector's approval will the lender issue that month's draw. After construction is completed, then you, the developer, will need to obtain a permanent loan. The permanent loan is long-term financing that will require a monthly payment for principal and interest. The proceeds of the